Off in the salty ocean, off where the waves roll free. The sparkling water rises, then crashes to the sea. Out amongst the breakers, you'll have no need to fear. It's true, it's the blue frontier.
Welcome to another episode of Rising Tide, the Ocean Podcast. My co-host Vicky's on the road, so today I'll be speaking one-on-one with Erica Hammond, Legislative Director of the Rhode Island AFL-CIO, that of course being the nation's leading federation of labor unions. Erica is also a member of Climate Jobs Rhode Island, a coalition of labor, environmental, and community groups working toward an equitable pro-worker green and blue economy. One of the projects they support is Revolution Wind, a $4 to $5 billion, 704-megawatt offshore wind farm that's slated to power 350,000 homes in the Ocean State and adjacent Connecticut. That is, until the Trump administration ordered a construction stop in August, with the project already 80% complete. Then at the end of August, the Trump administration canceled $679 million in federal funds to support the growing offshore wind industry. And then this from the September 3rd New York Times, quote, "The White House has taken the extraordinary step of instructing a half dozen agencies to draft plans to thwart the country's growing offshore wind industry as it intensified its government-wide attack on a source of renewable energy." At a recent foreign cabinet meeting, Bobby Kennedy Jr. even thanked Trump for saving East Coast whales. That's one of those false claims being made about how offshore wind turbines harm whales, while offshore oil rigs, I suppose, lull them to sleep at night with dreams of energy dominance. Drill, baby, drill. Anyway, Erica, lot to get into, but before we do, usual question. When in your life did you first connect with the ocean?
Well, thank you so much for having me, David. I think that that's an easy one. Growing up, being born and raised in the Ocean State, my first connections with the ocean were really when I was really young. I can remember my mom bringing my sister and I to the beach because it's one of her favorite places all summer long, but also far into the fall as well, just enjoying summer nights, but also fall nights along the beach, watching the sunset or just staring at the waves for hours, losing track of time.
How did your professional development go?
So in college, I studied, it was crime and justice studies with a large focus on sociology and anthropology. I found my way then to the local Jobs with Justice here in Rhode Island, an organization that works very closely with community and labor organizations. And from there, I met many of the different individuals in the labor movement here in Rhode Island, and I became very, very interested in working within the labor movement. So I found my way over to the Institute for Labor Studies and Research, where I worked as the labor liaison. That's the training and education arm of the labor movement here in Rhode Island. And then we had launched our Climate Jobs Rhode Island Coalition. And when that launched, I said, I want to be there working on that. A lot of the work overlaps with many of the jobs that I've been in. So I shifted over to the Climate Jobs Coalition as the field director. And that coalition is really where I learned so much more about the environmental movement. I had so much background on the labor movement and different workers' rights and social justice campaigns and issues that many of the organizations here have worked on. But for me, a lot of the environmental campaigns were new.
A lot of the history of politics in this country is divide and conquer, and there's certainly been a historic division that's been pushed between environmental activism and labor activism. How did the Climate Jobs Coalition come together there in Rhode Island?
So that's exactly why it came together. It came together back in 2021 when some labor leaders here in Rhode Island got together with some legislators and environmental advocates who had been doing this work for a long time. And it was just agreed upon that, you know, we could be getting so much more work done if we're working together rather than focusing on the things we disagree on. There's so much that we do agree on. So really, the coalition came together around common or agreed upon goals. The coalition focuses on climate, justice, and jobs. Is it good for the climate? Is it good for increasing local jobs and injustice? And are we making sure that the work that we're doing is decreasing economic injustice throughout this state?
So it's kind of that triple bottom line of environment, economy, and equity.
Exactly.
And was the revolution, the offshore wind, a precipitator of this? Or what specifically in 2021 got this coalition rolling?
So really, our work with offshore wind started back in 2007, 2008, and it was largely pushed by many labor leaders, specifically our Rhode Island Building and Construction Trades Council on the Block Island Wind Farm. But then when you fast forward to bringing together the Climate Jobs Coalition, it really centered around the very first campaign that the coalition worked on, which is the Act on Climate. So the Act on Climate was passed in 2021, and it sets emissions reduction mandates for the state to meet. There's some in 2030, 2040, and then ultimately in 2050 being net zero by 2050. And then we got to work really working on, we had really three kind of pillar campaigns that we worked on in our first 2 years. The first was the labor standards on all renewable energy projects. We wanted to make sure that as we're working on renewable energy and as this burgeoning industry is coming into the state, we're making sure that those jobs are not a race to the bottom. We want to make sure there's strong labor standards. So we want to pay prevailing wage. We want to have apprenticeship utilization, which is how we bring more individuals into the trade from different communities. And we also want to make project labor agreements as well.
Right, because all new industries kind of tend to rush to the bottom. Solar for a long time was just, you know, a day hire kind of installation, and there was no security for the labor force. It went with the ups and downs. So this coalition came together. There were already projects on the horizon. As you say, Block Island was one of the early wind projects. When did Ørsted and Revolution come on the scene?
They had been on the scene when the coalition had formed, and both labor, specifically the building trades, had a very good relationship and had been really working on that relationship with Ørsted. And Climate Jobs really just worked on being an avid supporter and supporting that work as much as possible. So Revolution Wind, well, now we're at 80% complete, but they've been working on this project for about 9 years.
And of course, being a Danish company, Ørsted realized, unlike a lot of American companies, that organized labor is a benefit for construction, not something to oppose.
Yeah, and Ørsted was the first developer in offshore wind to issue or to form an agreement with the national building trades unions as well to make sure that they're using strong labor standards in all of the work that they do. And that was a perfect example of how we can do this together and we can be operating together on this.
Right. And of course, I mean, I've been on a lot of offshore oil rigs, and the skills of roughnecks and roustabouts translate pretty easily to linesmen and, you know, and turbine techs and so forth.
There's a lot of transferable skills. Absolutely.
So what crafts are involved in building large scale offshore wind facilities and onshore power links?
There are so many we have, and I know that they'll be upset if I forget any of them. The laborers, the painters, the iron workers, the carpenters, and the millwrights. There's also work for the elevator constructors who are part of the building trades as well. There's the cement masons also have work there. There's so many.
As this large, complex program got underway, how many workers are engaged in this particular project?
So far, Revolution Wind specifically has had over 2 million work hours. That's for union workers alone. So it translates to about 1,000 local union jobs alone. That's not including, there are plenty of other workers, you know, on the job who are not union.
And when we were lobbying for a lot of this in 2020, we were talking with state officials from Massachusetts who were excited that offshore wind would also lower consumer rates. Is that the same case with Rhode Island? Is the ratepayers going to save money by switching from fossil to offshore?
So it seems like it gets lost in a lot of the misinformation how low the electricity rate was that came in for Revolution Wind. So when Revolution Wind was permitted, it came in at just under 10 cents per kilowatt hour of electricity. And that's for a 20-year power purchase agreement. So last year alone, our winter rates, which in Rhode Island run from October to May, were at just over 16 cents per kilowatt hour. And the year before that, the wintertime rates were just over 17 cents per kilowatt hour. So 10 cents per kilowatt hour, we're saving a lot of money. And that's for a 20-year agreement. So with the volatility of the global fossil fuel market, we don't know what our cost of fossil fuels are going to be for our electricity in 20 years. But in 18 years with Revolution Wind, we know that the electricity they'll be generating will be at 10 cents. So it's seems like a no-brainer that gets lost in the weeds very often.
The rates would be as consistent as offshore wind is consistent.
Yes, exactly.
And this is why, in another historic error that's almost forgotten, at the beginning of the Biden administration, when President Biden bragged that he was going to like double our offshore wind production, we had Blue Frontier and the Center for the Blue Economy formed a Ocean Climate Action Coalition, and we made fun of him. We said, if you double our wind production capacity, we'll be at 1% of the EU, and really pushed the idea that like we're going to protect 30% of land and water by 2030. We really needed to look at 30 gigawatts of offshore wind by 2030. And we were on that course, and construction was underway. All this energy and jobs was happening. And then President Trump, who holds grudges, didn't like offshore wind in Scotland that could be viewed from his golf courses, and has had a bee on his butt ever since. So what's the present situation? I mean, when did things start to go south? Was there warnings before this work stop order?
Yeah, I keep saying anyone that's surprised by this wasn't paying attention for long enough. Since before he was elected, Trump had been talking about his disdain for offshore wind. Of course, we were all, you know, hopeful because of the cost of the electricity and because of the significant amount of work that has gone into this, the job opportunities, the investments in our local communities. We all were hopeful that this would, you know, continue moving forward, especially a project like this that's 80% complete. But then on Friday, August 22nd, the federal government issued a stop work order for Revolution Wind. So immediately that put work on hold that was happening. So we had several hundreds of trades workers who were working on Friday night and then woke up on Saturday, because when you're offshore, you work 7 days a week. They woke up on Saturday morning to phone calls saying, "You're not working today." So we're
talking about hundreds of employees just on this one project.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And more who had their bags packed to go out on Thursday, the following week, ready to go for their turn, because they all work in rotations.
Right. Sometimes seven on, seven off, 7 days right. out there, seven, a lot like the oil industry.
And so they have to wait for a phone call. Which port are we going to? Where are we leaving out of? When are we leaving? When are we getting picked up? And they never got that call. So we still have people waiting for the call. We have people who've been shifted to other jobs, because you just simply can't keep waiting, not knowing when you're going to go out. So people are still waiting. The stop work order is still in place. And there's a lot of uncertainty about when people will be able to continue work, if they will ever be able to continue work on this project.
What is Rising Tide? Rising Tide is Blue Frontier's bi-weekly half-hour show that features a diversity of ocean voices, from the famous to the fascinating. Deep-sea explorers to whale wranglers, Arctic residents to climate justice warriors. With public broadcasting under attack, Blue Frontier offers Rising Tide and all associated content for free to community and public radio stations across the nation. We need your support to keep producing our salty, in-depth conversations. A tax-deductible donation at bluefront.org will help us keep getting the word out about our awesome blue planet. And now, back to the show.
Before we get to how people are able to respond, let's talk a little more about how the coalition came together, because it's going to take we the people. It's going to take bottom-up pressure. What were the challenges in bringing labor and environmental and community justice, climate justice groups together?
So for climate jobs, something that we often talk about is moving at the pace of trust. It's incredibly important. We all have our own priorities. For the labor movement, our number one priority is our members. We have to make sure we keep our members working, not just today, not just tomorrow, but 5 years from now. And for our environmental partners, depending on the different organization that they work for, they have their own priorities as well. We all know that a cleaner, healthier future for all of us is incredibly important. So there is a way that we can get to that while also maintaining each of our priorities. It was difficult because there was a lot of learning opportunities. So for our environmental partners, many of them didn't know what apprenticeship was, didn't know what a project labor agreement or labor peace agreement or labor neutrality, even being a part of a union. Many of our environmental affiliates didn't know what it meant to be a part of a union and didn't know what it meant to be a union member and have the labor movement supporting you. So we did a lot of introductory learning opportunities for coalition members. And just like we were, as a labor movement, we're able to share information with our environmental partners. Our environmental partners were able to teach many of our labor partners so much about this industry, not just the industry of offshore wind, but many different environmental fights that they're working on as well. When we worked on the renewable energy standard, which sets a renewable energy standard for Rhode Island of 100% electricity generated by renewable energy by 2033, there was a lot of question marks about what that even means. There's a lot of question marks about what net zero means, decarbonization, you know, so there's been a lot of opportunities for learning and there's been a lot of trust in that. We also have some community organizations that have been working with us. We've always had a very close relationship with Fuerza Laboral. They specifically worked on exploitation of migrant workers throughout the state. They are a part of our coalition as well. We work with Groundwork Rhode Island, which is a community organization working with so many different communities on different environmental projects and even workforce development. There's a lot of like overlap between some of our labor partners and some of our environmental partners that we didn't even know already existed. Yeah.
When he was running for president, Trump brought all the oil industry down to Mar-a-Lago, told him, give me $1 billion for the campaign. I'll give you whatever you want. This is clearly, you know, this energy emergency he's declared is all about promoting fossil fuel and destroying the competitive field for solar and wind. So you've got this global scale wind farm with the jobs, the cheaper energy it can produce, the not to mention the benefit of not having an environmental apocalypse on the planet. What's the thinking strategically? How is the coalition going to move forward? How do you work with the state house? It's early on the challenge, but how do you think you're able to bring this back?
Yeah, it's difficult because we haven't quite been told yet what they want. We could speculate several things of why they're doing this and several reasons and what they want out of it. But that would only be speculation. Since the night it happened, the Sapor Accord, we've been working with our congressional delegation, the governor's office, our labor affiliates, and Attorney General Peter Nerona, who had a press conference this morning. And he issued as well a new lawsuit with the Connecticut Attorney General about this specific project and this stop work order.
Right. I assume your two senators and two Congress members are also fairly outraged on what's happening here.
They are very outraged. And I would put our congressional delegation up against anyone's congressional delegation across the country. We have the best.
These attacks aren't just on offshore wind. It's on clean energy, but it's also gutting NOAA, the National Oceanographic Atmospheric Administration. I mean, you're seeing across the board attacks on any climate-related solutions. A lot of it's we the people is their discussion among the unions of, I mean, the government's created a work stoppage by pulling the plug on this project. What's Ørsted's position? Are they saying anything about how long they're willing to stay in the game now that they're under attack?
Just as they've been throughout this whole project process, they've been a great partner. We are doing everything that we can as a labor movement to mobilize our membership and really share it. Like, we have plenty of membership that's never worked on offshore wind.
Sure.
But as a labor movement, we are stronger together. So we've been doing our best to mobilize our members and really share the nitty-gritty details about what's happening here so we can really show the collective outrage around this decision. Ørsted has been a great partner. I know that I believe, have already issued their own lawsuit. I think it might have come out today as well against the Trump administration for this Revolution Wind Stop Work Order. So we're still, you know, working in lockstep with them. They have not issued any sign of backing down. They've put so much investment into this project, into both the ports that we have here in Rhode Island, across three ports, one in Connecticut, two in Rhode Island, and also like thinking about the workforce development investments that they've put into Rhode Island, whether it's the Global Wind Organization training at CCRI, standing that facility and program up in the state so that Rhode Island can be a hub for that training is really something to be proud of. But also the amount of work that they've put into, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Building Futures, they're an amazing organization here in Rhode Island that has been really the flagship organization across the state working on apprenticeship and pre-apprenticeship. They were able to train with investments from Orsted and investments from the state and the labor movement here and the building trades here. They were able to train 220 tradespeople on global wind certification training, basic safety, helicopter underwater training, all of the things to be able to send people out offshore. And that was all done before construction started on Revolution Wind. It was in preparation and making sure that we had the workforce in Rhode Island to be able to send them out on these projects. Orsted's commitment to Rhode Island and commitment to our workforce has never wavered. And so we'll continue to work to make sure that we move this forward with them.
And before this administration's attack on clean energy, what was the timeline? When was Revolution Wind supposed to go online and start generating power?
Revolution Wind was supposed to go online in 2026.
Literally next year, we would have been making the transition. And this is all about an attack on the needed and economically more beneficial, as you've been pointing out, transition from dirty fossil fuels to clean energy.
Yeah, even our grid here, ISO New England, they issued a statement as well as their disappointment in this decision because they were relying on this energy to come onto the New England grid next year. They've been planning for it. Across the country, our energy demand has grown, an increase in AI, an increase in data centers, all of the above. We need to be bringing more electricity on, and this uncertainty of whether or not the 500 megawatts of electricity that's already complete and then an additional 200 that's about to be finished, whether or not that 700 megawatts is coming online next year leaves a big hole and uncertainty for our grid. It's embarrassing, and I can't say I'm surprised. It's embarrassing for a man to say he is pro-worker and then to do this to workers and to an entire industry doesn't make sense.
It does not make sense. I mean, there's no question coal and oil were great energy sources for the 16th and 19th century, but this is the 21st century where we need the transition, and it's happening there, or it has been happening in Rhode Island.
Yeah, we need to diversify our energy mix. You know, diversifying your mix in any other industry is important, whether it's financial or anything. You know, we need to be diversifying our energy and bringing on more energy.
So you're educating the whole labor force in Rhode Island about the value of what's being threatened here.
I'll be honest, this Revolution Wind stop work order is just another punch. We've been rolling with the punches since January. We knew that they were going to come. When the election went the way that it did in November, we said we're not getting out of election mode. We can't. We have to continue to operate as if we're in election mode, talking to members as much as possible about what's at stake come the midterms, because we have nothing to lose at this point. We need to make a change come the midterms. Talking to members about not just this project, but how every single decision that's happening at the federal level has a direct impact on their work, and not just in the construction industry, in every industry. We see what's happening with healthcare as well on our healthcare workers. So I think that we are just continuing to stay in election mode and continuing to do what we do best, which is get boots on the ground and mobilize our members to turn out. You can't talk to someone who's not being impacted by not just this project, but the decisions that are being made at the federal level. And with our climate jobs team as well, they've been working to figure out what's next. We want to make sure that we don't lose the momentum that we had from last week when all of this really came to a head, and we want to keep moving things forward. So I think a big thing is sharing the information about what the impact is. So they've been doing a good job of really trying to put those numbers together and share them out through social media, because there's so much information that's generated and fueled by social media, and just trying to break through that noise, because it's really difficult to see well-intentioned people who are maybe in opposition to offshore wind because of some bit of misinformation that has been shared with them about its impact on marine life and in our oceans. And I think maybe I give them the benefit of the doubt that they are well-intentioned and they're just getting bad information, but we need to figure out how to cut through that noise because the science continues to point otherwise.
Clearly, you've got, you know, this project that's almost complete that's supposed to go online next year, and this incredible pushback against the next generation of clean energy is, I'm sure, is going to be one of the many issues that are brought up in the midterms. And the conflict on the 250th anniversary of what's been an expanding democracy from sea to shining sea. We'll be hearing more from certain from Climate Jobs Rhode Island, from organized labor. You're the legislative director. What's your next legislative battle?
Our next legislative battle is seeing how the impacts of this one big ugly bill is really going to hit Rhode Island. We're going to have a lot of work to be done when it comes budget time next year. There's a lot of uncertainty around how hard Rhode Island's going to be hit, not just, you know, with things like Medicaid and Medicare, but also our workforce. So there's been a significant number of attacks on workers at the federal government. We have a very strong State Labor Relations Act, or Baby Wagner Act. We were able to really shore up last year during the legislative session, but there's new ruling that's coming out of the federal government that may impact that. So I think we are going to make sure we do everything we can to continue to protect workers here in the state, across the country, really, but we will work on what we can really control here in the state. So I think that we'll be back fighting, pushing against a lot of the crap, really, that's coming out of the federal government.
Erica Hammond, Legislative Director of Rhode Island AFL-CIO, thank you so much for joining us today on Rising Tide Ocean Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us on the Rising Tide Ocean Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and leave us a review or share it with your friends and other ocean lovers. Follow us on Instagram and visit bluefront.org for more updates and additional resources. Rising Tide is a production of Blue Frontier, co-hosted by David Helvark and me, Vicki Nichols Goldstein of the Inland Ocean Coalition, with production support from Holden Hardcastle of Fluid Studios, Natasha Benjamin, and Nick Paz, and editing services provided by Charles Landon of Studio Cape May. Thanks for listening, and until next time, stay hopeful and stay salty.
Off in the salty ocean, off where the waves roll free, the sparkling water rises, then crashes to the sea. Out amongst the breakers, you'll have no need to fear. It's true, it's the blue frontier. Tear. Off in the salty ocean, off to the blue frontier.
Sparky, come here, buddy. Sparky. There you are. Good boy, Sparky.